So if I invite you, if you choose to join me in just a couple of quick stretches and some little qigong movements. Let's start by just reaching up to the ceiling on our toes. Nice stretch. Okay, and then let the hands fall down. And let's shrug our shoulders three times up to our ears, taking a deep breath in. Hands on the shoulders, and as you come forward, breathe in and exhale down. Let's open the chest and reverse. This time, exhale coming over. Shake out a little bit. We're not shaking up, we're shaking every energy of the body down into the ground. You want to feel the weight coming down into your feet and your heels bouncing. And you can go side to side. I'm going to just slow down. Loosen up the hips and the neck. Loosen slow neck rolls. And try to keep that meditative awareness on the breath, the body, its place, its space. Now, reverse direction. Rotate your hips in a circle, but try to keep your head centered. This is great for the lower back. Again, reverse direction. Toes, but just let your arms hang, and then let your head hang, and just feel gravity do its work. As you relax on each out-breath, just feel the muscles relax in the calves. Just let the thighs go. There's no, not trying to accomplish anything, but other than just relax and let the body, just let those muscles lengthen. Perhaps the buttocks, the shoulders are lengthened. And just breathe out. And some of us thought we couldn't touch our toes anymore. Now let your fingers touch your ankles. And very slowly from your lower back, roll upwards, very gently. Hands rest on the back of your hips, depending on your flexibility. Roll backwards, but don't stress, just whatever feels comfortable. Okay, and now, let's do a little bit of tapping to finish. So get the chi and the energy flowing. Lower abdomen. side of the legs. Inside. Tapping at the knees. Kidneys. Okay. Now, just gently do some tapping at the forehead, top of the head, the sides, back of the neck, and back up to the eyebrows just above them. To the cheeks, stimulate the gums, the upper gums, lower gums and jaw and mandible. Now, just gently massage your ears. Nose. Okay, we'll finish with a couple of Qigong breaths. So let your hands, your palms face your Dan Qian in the center. As you breathe in, let them open up, take the energy in, and then exhale, bringing them together slowly. Chest open and exhale. Now let your palms continue to face each other. Feel them come as you bring them a little bit closer and further away. See if you can notice a little bit of heat or energy between them. If you do, see if you can shape it into a ball. If you feel any limits to it or edges, recompress it. And then taking your left hand first, touch it to your Dan Qian, just below your belly button. Put the right hand on top, circle 8 times clockwise. And then press inwards. And relax. Thank you. Tremendous appreciation.
Is there anybody here who is not familiar with the 12th step of Alcoholics Anonymous? There are 12 steps of recovery in the program, just as there are 8 steps on the Noble Eightfold Path. And the 12th step is having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. When I first came in the program, I immediately went to step 12. It was a habit of mine. And immediately tried to get everybody else to stop drinking. That's not what this step is about. What's a spiritual awakening? That's a very deep question. Now we could start with, what is it to be awake? Well, when we're awake, we have more possibilities of seeing, of seeing what's there. If you're driving a car, it's good to be awake. So awake is very important. To be spiritually awake is having more of a capacity to see what's true, what is really true. And it even involves being true beyond what our notion is of true, because we can be a little limited in that. I think for most of us, for most people, a spiritual awakening is a continuously interwoven, evolving process, and it involves a maturing understanding, a continuing unfolding. When the Buddha sat and he decided he was going to sit until he fully understood what is it that haunts us so, he became fully awake from what I understand. For most of us, it's incremental. And it can start when we first defog our minds from whatever it is that we have been abusing. In another way with the spiritual awakening, we lose this claustrophobic sense of me, a sense of self. And the more we're involved with me, 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 the smaller our world is, right? And we'll only see things through the lens of me. And our world is suffering tremendously because people, countries are seeing through the small lens of me, ours, right? And so this is really about opening beyond that to more of a sense of freedom and trust. And this path of the Eightfold Path, the path of the 12 Steps, it's not linear. It's not linear. It's circular and it's continuous. And you keep coming back to the same place and you see it as if for the first time. Right? People have had that experience, I suspect. So the 12 Steps, they echo the spiritual wisdom of the ages. Every spiritual path, every religious path has some form of openings that take place. And I find that these 12 steps certainly resonate greatly with the teachings of the Buddha. They, for me, they just dance together so beautifully. And I found for myself that the more I got involved in the Buddha's teachings, the more I appreciated the 12 steps. And then that just, beautiful music to me. Both Buddhism, it sounds sort of spiritual, doesn't it? It'll go into rock and roll, I think, pretty soon. But both Buddhism and the 12 steps begin by addressing suffering, begin by addressing delusion. That's how it starts. And from there's more and more of an opening. And then it expands as it continues to go. The first teaching of the Buddha, after he sat and realized, he sat and he said, I am not getting up. As the earth is my witness, I am not getting up till I understand what is this life process about. And when he finally did get up, so it goes, the first talk he gave was on the Four Noble Truths. Well, the first noble truth was that there is suffering. Life has it built into it, right? Can't help it. We get sick, we age, we die. It's going to happen. We can't keep everything we want. We can't get rid of everything we don't want. Things happen and we wonder what's just going on. And there's a form of suffering. That's life. It comes with this mind-body process that we have. We spend a lot of time trying to push that away. And sooner or later, if we're lucky, we learn, oh, okay, let me work with what I'm dealt here, okay? And the second noble truth was, and here's where he and Bill are dancing in the same place. The second noble truth is there's a cause of suffering. And he saw what it was. He saw that the cause of suffering was this virulent attachment, desire, needing to have things a certain way, a grasping, a clinging, a craving, desire. And then he also saw, wait, there's a solution. There is a solution. And with that, he said, the solution is this Eightfold Path that he put out. There is a path for the release from suffering. And he gave guidelines how to cultivate a life, how to live a life that doesn't cause harm to ourselves and others. And in a way, that almost can sound like a throwaway line, a life that doesn't cause harm to ourselves or others. But if you look at any given point during the course of a day, little decisions that we make, something we might say, something we might do, can very easily be hurting ourselves or hurting someone else. And a lot of times we're not even aware, right? We're not even aware. And so the Buddha taught there were essential values. Thank you so much, Cliff, for helping here. He said three essential values: wisdom, ethics, or virtue, and meditative awareness. These comprise the Eightfold Path. And in the same way, we have the path of the 12 steps. And this is a path for overcoming a particularly virulent form of attachment, desire, craving, clinging. Some form of something we call addiction. And you may have noticed it comes in so many different forms. And they all seem to hurt us, and they all seem to hurt the people around us. And again, there's this wire encompassing context of I, me, mine. The addiction to I, me, mine. And you know, what you can do, even take a few hours or take a day or take a half hour and notice how many times during the course of that period of time you see something in the context of me. I mean, sometimes we have to say I because we're trying to express something, and it's just a way of making connection. But the lens of me is quite amazing. And if you just pay more attention to it, you see it more closely. So you can take a look at the process. The first part of the process is surrender. Because without that, you know, you're not going to... It might be interesting to read. You know, I have so many books, even while I was using. I have so many books that I underlined. And I look back at the underlining and say, what was I thinking? But a surrender is not just up here. A surrender is like all in here. This admission of powerlessness. But it's such a wonderful thing when we see how it functions in terms of our spiritual development. It's an open door. I mean, when I first came in to AA, I wasn't thinking, oh, good, now I'll grow into, I'll have a spiritual development, I'll have greater capacity, I'll see the truth. I was more like, I don't know where to put my foot anymore. I'm cooked. And so this happens in both traditions. Because a lot of people come and study the Buddha's teachings and they sit and meditate, and you get more involved with, did I have a good meditation? Rather than, what's happening here? How does this play out in my life? How does this play out in my mind? And so in this surrender, there's a turning towards a higher power. Now, a higher power is a place where many people get stuck. Because I heard it from myself. I remember the psychiatrist who told me about AA, and he read the steps to me, and the first thing I said to him was, oh, it's not going to work. He said, really? How do you know that so soon? He said, because God, I don't believe in God. Who am I to not believe in God? Who am I to believe in God? But what is it anyway? We think we know God. How can anybody know precisely exactly what is God? But we know that there is something more than what I know. And that was a really big step for me, to really admit, I don't have all the answers. I don't even have the questions. And that was a big beginning. That was a beginning of, okay, let me see, let me see. But there is certainly, in terms of the Buddha's teachings, there's a thing called in Buddha nature, that there's some potential in all of us underneath all the conditioning that is pristine, that is clear, that is wide, open. Not always easy to access that, but even to know that that capacity or potential is there underneath all the conditioning. And then this process of letting go that we learn, whether we're doing the Buddha's teachings or Bill W.'s teachings, the steps, and meditation augments and deepens the power of surrender. I think I've been sober, I'm not sure, 38 years, 39, something. And this word surrender, this idea of surrender, the capacity, the function of surrender, has certainly deepened from when I first walked in. Because it's way beyond surrendering to, this is a drug and it's hurting me. I'm surrendering to that too. How did they change? It changed so quickly from one way of being to another. The power of surrender. Adyashanti is a wonderful, wonderful teacher. And in a pithy reply in an interview to a student who brought up something about why he or she was holding on to something, he said, hold on, deny what is, suffer. Let go, let be what is, be happy. Go against life, hurts. Go with life, happy. It's like going in the way of the traffic. So there's... Is that you? Was that from in the room? No, please stay. Just throw that away. Thank you. Thank you so much. That's so funny. See, we don't always know where our problem is coming from. I planted in there so I could say that one liner. So once we surrender, then it's about responsibility. Sure. Hold on, deny what is, suffer. Let go, let be what is, be happy. Go against life, hurts. Go with life, happy. Not always easy, because we keep wanting it another way. Keep wanting it another way. So once there's surrender, then we're talking about responsibility. And again, this word responsibility, I love looking at words. The word responsibility is ability to respond. If we're caught in delusion, if we're caught in what happens when we're using whether a behavior or a substance, our ability to respond is not very good, right? So the ability to respond, we need to be awake in order to respond because we need to see what's happening in order to respond. And so it's so beautiful in Bill W.'s program, we take a look at the inventory, right? We start to make amends. And in the Buddhist point of view, from the Buddhist perspective, this responsibility can be called cleaning up karma, seeing how cause and effect has operated in our lives, seeing how some of the effects that we're experiencing in our life is coming from something we caused, not from out there. You know, so much blame. How could they do this to me? How could this one be? How could that one be? Instead of going, well, let me see what anything I'm doing here. And that's very interesting when you're working with couple counseling. It's real easy to put the blame over there. So cleaning up karma and being willing, and this isn't easy, but it's freeing, being willing to look openly at our shadow sides, at our shadow. And that shadow is following us wherever we go. And we need to know it's there. We need to know it's there. And the more we realize as long as we realize this law of cause and effect and how it is working in our lives, we can move closer to freedom. And this is one of the first parts of the Eightfold Path, to really get this, to see this. And then once we see it happening and are willing to own it, then we want to live a life with more awareness. We want to live a life with more care. So taking responsibility then doesn't become so onerous. It becomes, yeah, hey, I want to be freer. How many people here want to be happy? Am I the only one? You don't want to be happy? So if we really want to be happy, we have to do what will cause happiness to come. Which very often means letting go of things we don't want to let go of. I still have some problems with an eating behavior. So on one hand, I can say, oh, I just want to be thin and healthy, but I want to be able to eat this and also be thin and healthy. It doesn't work. Now, my mind understands that, but I have not yet gotten fully to that place of knowing what I know. So it's not enough just to have information up here. How many of you knew, you kind of suspected you had a problem with alcohol or food or sex or something, and just kept on going? Anybody? Yeah. So it's not enough just to have that little bit of information. It needs to be in here. This is part of spiritual awakening. It's happening in here. It's not how much information that you have. I know people who are so well read and can quote chapter and verse of so many things and are still caught in the trap of delusion. Right? So we find ourselves on this path of surrender and responsibility, which leads us to also wanting to lead a more ethical life. And sila, ethics, morality, that was a major part of the Buddha's teachings. That and generosity, so important. So, and then there's fulfillment. Now, fulfillment doesn't mean graduation. Because fulfillment can keep changing. You can get, have you noticed that? That it can have a different shades to it, different flavor to fulfillment. There's an ongoing commitment to growth and wisdom that kind of happens. There's a Korean Zen monk, Jinru, he spoke of sudden enlightenment and gradual development. And a lot of times people, when they have an experience that feels like a spiritual awakening, maybe in a meditation something has happened and there are lights or there's total bliss or something, I said, okay, now I got it. Well, you only got it as long as it's there. And the thing is, you can either get trapped. Oh, I got it now. Now I'm going to go teach. I'm going to this, that, and the other thing. I'll tell everybody what I think they need to know. Or it can inspire you to stay in the moment and continue. And the 11th and 12th steps, they address staying in this conscious contact with ourselves and with others. In with whatever our higher power is, whatever that is. Whatever that is. And the key word here is conscious. When I think how many decades I wasn't really conscious. How many people are still out there sleepwalking? You know, they're saying what needs to be said, they're doing what needs to be done. That's not it. When we're conscious, what starts to happen, we start to develop this sense of service, of generosity, because we start to realize We're like everybody else. I don't have the exact kind of pain that everybody else here has. But I know what it's like to be human. And we all have whatever our particular version of it is. Wanting to push away, not being able to keep what we need and want. Wanting love, not feeling love. Just the wanting. Like being so thirsty and you can't get enough water. That kind of wanting. And meditation keeps us grounded. Meditation keeps us grounded and helps us be in the here and now. And helps us see clearly. Because as we cultivate more meditation, and some of you may have this and some of you may want to study a little more of this and work with it, we see how these minds work. We see how easily we get caught. We see how easily we believe the garbage that our mind throws out. And for me, a perfect mantra is, just because I believe it doesn't mean it's true. And if I remember that, it saves me and a lot of other people some heartache. Just because I believe it doesn't mean it's true. So, what does it mean to carry the message? One of the main steps in the recovery process, as I think you all know, is getting out of yourself and doing service. Just by going to a meeting is doing service, because you showed up so other people see that. When you share at a meeting, even if you share, my name is Sandra, I'm unhappy tonight, but I'm not using. That's service. I've shared. I've opened. I've become one with. There are many forms of service. And thousands and thousands and thousands of recovering addicts around the world are a testament to this. This is really a program of generosity. And so a key flavor of the Buddhist teachings is getting out of ourselves, is realizing the interdependence. Because once you realize the interdependence, once you realize the impact of one has on the other, compassion fills our hearts. It has to. It has to. And there are many teachings in different Buddhist paths of bodhisattvas, people who just gave their lives to be of service to others. And we don't have to give our lives to be of service. We have to just show up and stay open and stay real. And stay real. And such a gift. And it's so true. One of the best ways to get out of your own self, if you're having a bad day or feeling mad about something, is to help someone else. And just in those few minutes of doing it, it lightens up, right? I mean, it might come back after you lighten up for a minute. It might come back. But it's just awesome. We are so fortunate. I think they should have a 12-step program for people without an addiction, don't they? Yes. I think they should start teaching it in kindergarten. It is really an amazing program. Each moment that you take off the armor of I, me, mine, take it off even for a moment, and you see past your own predicament, I see past my own shit, my own stuff, and I feel into the hurt in the heart of someone else, in that moment there's a special awareness. And we can call it also a spiritual awakening. And the more you have that, it's almost like the more you want it. Like if something feels good, we want it. So why not want some of this that's helpful for everybody rather than the stuff that just is a curse for everybody? We can be happy. Shantideva was an 8th century Indian Buddhist scholar, and he put it very simply. I love it. You know, people write these big books, and then along comes a scholar and writes a line. He said, all the happiness that there is in this world comes from thinking of the other. All the suffering comes from preoccupation with yourself. I think, remember, somebody told me this a long, long time ago. I was somebody in the program. Somebody called his sponsor and said, I'm suffering, I don't know what's going on. I'm having a really, really hard day. And the sponsor said, who are you with right now? And he said, I'm alone. He said, well, you're in bad company. Yeah. How often we can be in bad company. So the 12th step, this step talks a lot about practicing these principles in all our affairs. So I'm going to go quickly with this so we have more time for sharing. How do we bring the spiritual life into our daily life? So that they come together, so that it's one. It's not, this is my daily life, now I'm going to bring spiritual life into it. Let's make it one. Thich Nhat Hanh, such a beautiful Vietnamese monk, periodically he comes to New York. If you hear that he's going to be in town and you can be even near his presence, you don't have to be Buddhist to enjoy him. He's awesome. And he said, it's not so important whether you walk on water or walk in space. The true miracle is to walk on earth. In other words, becoming a kind human being is probably the greatest miracle we can perform. We all have that capacity, right? So what are some of the things we can do? I'll just say this real quickly and then Nancy will share for a bit. Upon waking up, if you wake up and go, God, there's the alarm, now I gotta get dressed, I gotta go to work, oh, what a horrible day I'm gonna have. That's not a good way to start. Because some of it may come true, what you're saying. So setting some kind of a positive motivation in the morning is very beneficial. Because when we wake up, our minds are very delicate, and they're subtle, and they're pliable. So just set a strong motivation, like today I'll be kind, today I'll be happy, today I'll do something nice for someone else. Today I'll be curious, whatever it is, something. Just start the day somehow. Finding time to meditate each day is really helpful. Now, to meditate doesn't mean sitting down for 45 minutes every day. You don't. It's good if you can do it, but you don't have to. Often I hear people say, I hear myself say, oh my God, I don't have time. But somehow we have time to watch TV, we have time to go shopping, we have time to gossip on the phone with people, etc., etc. We have time to get a snack. But in 24 hours, there's got to be a couple minutes where you can sit down and be with yourself. Just fit it in somewhere. Nourishing ourselves, very important. Practicing the Dharma in the workplace. So practicing the Dharma, practicing this whole idea of what Bill has been teaching, being kind, being ethical. Try to remember the kind heart. Don't think about the one person at work that you can't stand, because you'll go in there with a chip on your shoulder. So just know every once in a while at work, but I can be a spiritual person at work as well. You know, it's not just safe for when I get to the meeting later. But we have to set that in motion. Cultivating mindfulness. You know, nobody knows if you're being mindful. You know, you can start to pay more attention to what you say before you say it, what you're going to do before you do it. And nobody will say, oh, there goes Sandra trying to be mindful again. No. We can hide this. We can just don't hide it from yourself. Because if you are mindful, you know, I guarantee, well, there's no money involved, so okay, I guarantee you will be less exhausted at the end of the day if you bring some more mindfulness and awareness into your day. Momentary rest. Even, remember, once I said to a client, okay, you can put this on your computer, breathe, to remind you, like, every hour, take a few minutes to stop. He said, how can I take my son? I can't stop. I have to keep up. I said, you'll see. Just take a few minutes to stop and breathe. He said, my God, it really helps. Just stop for a few minutes. See if you can remember I love that one thing, random acts of kindness. What was the other part of that phrase? There was something else besides random acts of kindness. Anyway, remember random acts of kindness. It feels good. It's fun. You can get kind of used to it. It cuts through some of the negative energy. But I think one of the other big ones is being aware that we live in an interdependent world. How you respond to somebody is going to affect how they respond to somebody, and it's going to go all the way around. Being aware that when we pollute the environment, it's going to come back and nip us in the bud. Don't get away with anything. There's karma. Individual, collective. A really good time to be aware of this interconnection is when we have our meals. Where do the meals come from? Where did the food come from? Where did the eggs come from? Who planted the vegetables? Who picked them? Who packaged them? Who drove them here and there? It's not all ourselves. It's not all our own. And this thing about really, and receiving the food is with an act of gratitude. Oh yes, all that's been done, I can receive with gratitude. And what can I offer? What can I offer? And in the evening, reviewing the day. Reviewing the day, not so much to see where you were from, I'm a bad person, I'll never get it, etc., etc., but where was I kind? What did that feel like? What could I have done a little better? It's not about judging. It's just about being aware. And our life becomes more meaningful. The Venerable Thupten Chodron said, practicing Dharma is not difficult or time-consuming. We always have time. There are always 24 hours in a day. If we direct our mind in a positive direction, we can transform whatever we do into a path of enlightenment. In this way, Dharma becomes part of our life in an organic way. Getting up in the morning is Dharma. Eating and going to work is Dharma. Sleeping is Dharma. By transforming our attitude in the midst of daily activities, our life becomes very meaningful. And we're living them a 12-step. Let's just take one moment to reflect on all those words that just came out of my mouth. See what, if anything, rings true for you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.